WCRI's festival series highlights one of our community's greatest musical traditions, the Newport Music Festival. Since 1969, the Newport Music Festival has hosted over 2,000 concerts in Rhode Island's most prestigious venues, while presenting world-renowned and emerging classical music artists from around the globe. The Newport Music Festival has left an indelible mark on our music history here in Rhode Island, as well as around the world. Now, here's host Mike Mano, along with the festival's executive director, Pamela Pantos.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to WCRI's special presentation of the Newport Music Festival series. Tonight, we are once again welcoming Pamela Pantos, the new executive director of the Newport Music Festival. We're excited to be featuring the Newport Festival this year for a very special night, Halloween. It's very exciting.
So, Mike, have you gone trick-or-treating yet?
I don't have a good bag. I got to find a good bag in order to go trick-or-treating, but I will probably, yeah. After I leave you, I'll be going.
Okay, so it'll be quite late.
So what do you have for us about Halloween music-wise?
So here we are going to talk about some very spooky classical music. And actually, there's a great deal of music that is based on dark themes. And it's serendipitous that you asked me to be here this evening, as this summer in 2018, there is a Friday the 13th in July.
Uh-oh.
So obviously, we have been researching lots of ghoulish music for that concert.
July 13th is going to be a Friday. All right.
Exactly well, right.
Let's pick it up from there.
Okay. So as many of our listeners know, Halloween, the word Halloween, is a contraction of All Hallows Evening or All Saints Eve, which is a celebration. And it's based on the Western Christian Feast of All Hallows Day. So the Feast of All Hallows, on its current date in the Western Church, actually goes all the way back to Pope Gregory III in the 700s. And what's interesting about that is that much of the music that seems to be scary in nature has to do with death. And we repeatedly find this Dies Irae, the Latin hymn from the church, which translates to Day of Wrath. So this hymn, this Dies Irae, is best known as a sequence in requiems, which are mass for the dead or funeral masses. And this poem, the actual Latin poem, translates and talks about the last judgment, the trumpet summoning souls before the throne of God, where the good will be saved and delivered, and the unsaved will be cast into eternal flames. So I thought we'd listen to this Dies Irae in a very pure form, namely Gregorian chant, which in and of itself is quite haunting. And when you hear it, you can imagine how easily this could be translated and transposed to other pieces, creating chilling results.
And so we'll listen to this very short piece to get us in the mood.
Dies Irae.
So now, let's consider a piece of the romantic repertoire which utilizes this Dies Irae, namely Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique. Hector Berlioz was born in 1803 and died in 1869. He composed the Symphonie Fantastique in 1830 and then won the Prix de Rome, which was a very prestigious composition award. One of the stipulations of this award was that he had to travel to Italy for 2 years. And as we know from his music, Berlioz was greatly influenced by his experiences in Italy. Upon his return to Paris, a concert, which included the Symphonie Fantastique, was performed. And what's remarkable is who was in the audience at this performance, namely Victor Hugo, Alexandre Dumas, Heinrich Heine, Niccolo Paganini, Franz Liszt, Frédéric Chopin, George Sand, Théophile Gautier, and Berlioz's future wife, Harriet Smithson. So this fantastical symphony talks about an episode in the life of an artist in five parts, and it's highly programmatic, meaning that the composer wants to create a film-like visual experience for the audience, and this is long before we had film. So this piece of programmatic music tells the story of this artist who has a lively imagination, and he poisons himself with opium, which was quite the thing at the time, in the depths of despair because of a hopeless, unrequited love. So you can imagine how dramatic the whole piece is. So what's really interesting is that Berlioz provided his own program notes for each movement of the work. So he really told his audience what to listen for. So there are five movements. The first one is Rêverie, which is Passions. And then the second movement is Un Bal, which is a ball. The third movement is Chêne au Champ, Scenes in the Fields. The fourth movement is Marche au Supplice, March to the Scaffold. And the fifth movement, which we're going to hear, is Songe de Nuit du Sabbat, Dream of the Night of the Sabbath. So it's important to understand what happens in March to the Scaffold before we get to our fifth movement. So the artist dreams that he has killed his beloved in this opium, you know, reverie that he's in, and that he's condemned to death and he's led to execution. So there's this procession which advances to the sound of a march that's very wild. And the fifth movement, the dream of the night of the Sabbath, Berlioz describes as follows. He sees himself at a witch's Sabbath, in the midst of a hideous gathering of shades, sorcerers, and monsters of every kind who have come together for his funeral. He hears sounds and outbursts of laughter and shouts. So the melody of his beloved, which we hear earlier, comes back, but now everything seems quite vulgarized. She actually is come to the Sabbath to roar at the delight of his death, and she joins this diabolical orgy, and you'll hear this funeral knell tolling in the background and various versions of this Dies Irae. He uses it in a slow fashion, he uses it in a fast fashion, so he really takes the Dies Irae we just heard and completely manipulates it throughout this entire movement. So, without much ado, because this is a very exciting piece, let's listen to the fifth movement of Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique, performed by the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra and conducted by Sir Colin Davis.
Sounds real interesting. We'll listen and then take a short break and be back with more.
Thank you. Thank you.
are back on WCRI's special presentation of the Newport Music Festival, and Pamela Pantos is sitting with me. I'm Mike Mano, and asking questions about this very spooky music. That was great, that first segment.
Wasn't that scary? Did you hear all the witches?
I know. You were ready to brush the cobwebs away.
So we are going to stay with this theme of death and discuss the French danse macabre, which is translated as the dance of death. And this came about as an artistic genre of an allegory in the late Middle Ages on the universality of death, that no matter what one's station in life was, the danse macabre unites everyone. This came about because of the Hundred Years' War and the plague, and people were faced with death all around them. So the danse macabre consists of the dead, or the personification of death, who then summons representatives from all walks of life to dance along the path to the grave. And typically, these visuals had kings and children and common mans. And again, they were produced, sort of in this film-like way that we're on a theme tonight, I feel a little bit. They were produced to remind people of the fragility of their lives and how vain the glories of earthly life were and how important the afterlife was. And we can see this in the art of Bruegel and Holbein in very gruesome forms. The danse macabre that we are discussing this evening is a piece originally written for orchestra in 1874 by the French composer Camille Saint-Saëns, who lived from 1835 to 1921. It's a tone poem that is created to evoke, again, this visual from the listener, much like our Berlioz was a programmatic piece. It started out as an art song that he wrote in 1872, based on this old French superstition of the danse macabre, and then he expanded and reworked the piece into a tone poem, replacing the vocal line with solo violin. So according to this legend, death appears at midnight every year on Halloween. Death calls forth from the dead. He calls them from their graves to dance with him while he plays his fiddle. The skeletons dance for him until the rooster crows at dawn, when they must return to their graves until the next year. And so the text, it's so fascinating to see again where these composers get their inspiration. The text came from a poem, and the poem reads as follows in English translation. Zig, 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 death in cadence, striking a tomb with his heel. Death at midnight plays a dance tune, zig, zig, zag, on his violin. The winter wind blows and the night is dark. Moans are heard in the linden trees while skeletons pass through the gloom, running and leaping in their shrouds. Zig, 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 what a saraband. They all hold hands and dance in circles. Zig, 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 you can see the crowd and the king dancing among the peasants. All of a sudden, they leave the dance. They push forward and they fly. The cock has crowed. Oh, what a beautiful night for the poor world. Long live death and equality. And guess what you hear right in the middle of this piece? Yes, it's our Dies Irae. However, in this piece, it's presented in a major key, not a minor key, which makes it even more gruesome. So shortly after the premiere of this piece, it was transcribed into a piano arrangement by Franz Liszt, another great composer who was a terrific friend of Saint-Saëns. And the best-known piano transcription for four hands is by Ernest Guiraud. And it is this four-hand piano transcription that we are actually going to hear, and this is going to be performed this summer at the 50th anniversary season.
So if our listeners want to pick up on all this, they can learn more about it on a website, or how can they do that?
Absolutely. So if individuals would like to be, apprised and abreast of what's happening, they can go to our website, newportmusic.org, and actually sign up to receive our emails. Our full summer program will be available in January of 2018, and our listeners will actually be able to purchase tickets online at that point in time. As you know, we're also in the midst of our chamber music series, and we just had our first concert last Friday night of the Euclid Quartet at the Newport Art Museum, which was a terrific success, and everyone enjoyed it so much. It was a terrific evening. And our next concert will feature Serena Huang, the violinist who just won the Ilmar Oliveira competition, and she will also be appearing at the Newport Art Museum. But her concert will be on Friday, January 26th at 7 p.m., And the $40 ticket price includes a lovely wine and full appetizer reception, so you can eat and drink both before and during intermission and walk the entire gallery. And the local parking is free, so it's really a full experiential evening, and we hope our listeners join us. And if they'd like to learn a little bit more about the program that Serena is playing, they can actually go to the WCRI website at classical959.com and click at the top of the page of your podcasts, and our October 22nd podcast mic is right there.
There you go. So that's very easy to do. Just go to classical959.com. You can listen to Pamela Moore.
And you as well.
All right.
So now let's listen to that Danse Macabre, Opus 40 by Saint-Saëns, played by Joshua Pierce and Dorothy Jonas.
We will do that and then take a short break and be back with more.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Mike Mano, sitting with Pamela Pantos, talking about this spooky Halloween music that Pamela has discovered. And I'm learning lots of things, Pamela, that you've uncovered and giving me a lot of explanation to that spooky music we've had in the past. I know you have one more piece for us. Tell us about it.
Yes, we do. Since we mentioned that Liszt was a friend of Sasson, and many of our listeners may actually know he was a dear friend of Berlioz as well, so that was one of the reasons for the selection of these pieces. Actually, Berlioz and Liszt had a very special relationship as peers and men for over 35 years, and we know this from many of the letters that we've discovered. So let's talk a little bit about Franz Liszt, who lived from 1811 to 1886. He gained his fame in Europe during the early 19th century for his incredible virtuosic skill as a pianist. But in addition to that, he was a friend and he was a musical promoter and a benefactor to many composers of his time because of his fame. He mentored Frédéric Chopin, Richard Wagner, Hector Berlioz, Robert Schumann, Camille Saint-Saëns, Edvard Grieg, Mikhail Glinka, and Alexander Borodin, and it's amazing to think that all of these composers lived at the same time. So the piece we're going to discuss is called Totentanz, which means in German, Dance of the Dead. And it's the name of the symphonic piece for solo piano and orchestra by Franz Liszt, which is notable again because it is based on the Dies Irae. Some of the titles of Liszt pieces like Totentanz or Pensée des Morts really demonstrate that the composer had a fascination with death his entire life. And even in the young Liszt, in his early compositions, you can see his obsession with death, with religion, and heaven and hell. And according to Alan Walker, Liszt frequented Parisian hospitals, gambling casinos, and even asylums in the 1830s, and went down into the prison dungeons in order to see those condemned to die. So this was a little bit of Liszt's obsession, and you really hear it in this piece. In 1830, Liszt attended that very first performance of Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique, and he was completely struck with the piece. He was fascinated with this Dies Irae, and of course, because of his a little bit of this obsession with death, he decided to write a piece, his own Totentanz, his Dance of Death, that is this set of variations. And what's really remarkable and innovative about this is the shockingly modern and even percussive use of piano, which is not the way that the instrument was used at the time. It comes surprisingly close to Bartók's Sonata for two pianos and percussion, which actually was composed 100 years later. So you can hear Bartók being influenced by Liszt. Other modernistic features are the sessions where the pianist's repeated notes beat with diabolic intensity, and the special sound effects in the orchestra, like the collegno, which is, you know, when the violins strike their instruments, and it sounds like clanking bones. So an early biographer of Liszt named Richard Pohl wrote, "Every variation discloses some new character, the earnest man, the flighty youth, the scornful doubter, the prayerful monk, the daring soldier, the tender maiden, and the playful child." Again, this was a dance of death, much like our Danse Macabre, of all different kind of people. So the piece starts with our Dies Irae and is one of Liszt's most thrilling and shocking compositions. And it is truly diabolical in the sense as well as what it demands from the solo pianists. So on this Halloween evening, we will end our program by listening to Byron Yannis, pianist, and Fritz Reiner conducting the Chicago Symphony Orchestra with Liszt's Totentanz.
Thank you.
thank you for listening to WCRI's Festival Series featuring the Newport Music Festival. For more information on the festival, special seasonal concerts, to purchase tickets, or to donate, call 849-0700 or visit newportmusic.org.